Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are going to be talking some Bengals Jets as the Bengals hit the road for a third weekend in a row. They're going to wrap up a three-game road swing, and they're hoping to finish it 3-0. And Charlie, remember at the beginning of the season, we were saying how important this stretch would be because it would be an opportunity to really stack wins and set yourself up for the back half of the season. If the Bengals come out of this game, I would assume it might be a dominant performance with the Jets not having their starting quarterback, Zach Wilson. But this would tell you a lot about the Bengals team, especially coming off of the emotional win in Baltimore.
We're so far past the Bengals of 2019 and 20, but Zach Taylor kind of reminded me of how much has changed with what he said yesterday. They have a chance, as you mentioned, to go 3-0 on this road trip, if you want to call it that. Before this season, the Bengals had one road win under Zach Taylor. One. And it took, it was like a last-minute win where Hubbard got a strip sack to beat the Texans on the road to end the 2020 season. That was the only time the Bengals, again, had ever won a road game under Zach Taylor. And now they've won on the road previously this year, but they're now in position to win three in a row and do it in commanding fashion. It's at the point where I'm not caring who you're playing anymore, because with the well-rounded nature of what the Bengals are doing on a week-in, week-out basis, there's a lot to like. Again, it's so difficult to accomplish this type of accomplishment, winning three straight on the road, and it's just another sign of how much better the Bengals have gotten.
So now that we've both watched the film, gone through it, nitpicked, talked with Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow yesterday, Larry Ogunjobi, and Quentin Spain, who in my opinion was the highlight of the media availability. And I know you wrote a story about him and the Bengals offensive line, which we'll get to. But what stands out to you most about the Bengals' performance on Sunday?
So I wrote both these things on Monday and Tuesday, and honestly, I don't know which one is more impressive, that the Bengals have a top 10 defense right now or that Joe Burrow is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL right now. With the way they looked against opposing units that were supposed to be well-tailored to take advantage of their weaknesses, like the Ravens' blitz and their pressure and Marlon Humphrey were supposed to be something Joe Burrow wasn't ready to put 40 points up against yet. And from a Ravens offense perspective, the Bengals defense wasn't supposed to be ready to contain Lamar Jackson and to contain Mark Andrews yet. Both of those units just dominated the game and made the Ravens quit more than the Steelers did when the Bengals routed the Steelers in week three. So just the fact that the Bengals have both of those is something that I'll remember for a long time, as this week being the turning point that they proved it.
Yeah, I think what surprised me and what I thought was the most important thing that stood out to me was the Bengals protection, because we had continuously said, well, the Bengals hadn't really faced a front that besides Chicago that could really expose them. And I was not anticipating Cincinnati's offensive line to have a performance in the way they did. When you go on the road in Baltimore, and I don't care that Baltimore doesn't have the type of players that it's had in years past, this is a historically good defense. They're known for their defense in Baltimore. Their defensive coordinator is one of the best in the NFL. The Bengals offensive line, didn't look intimidated in the slightest, and they really played well, minus the one sack Joe Burrow took. I think the way that the Bengals offensive line is playing should really be commended and talked about more, because that was the biggest question mark about this team heading into the season. Will it be enough to keep Joe Burrow protected? And I actually asked Quentin Spain about that yesterday, and I said, do you pay attention to storylines? And he said, yes. And I said, well, what did you guys think about now, considering all you heard for the preseason and the first couple of weeks was, is this Bengals offensive line going to be good enough? Are they going to get Joe Burrow killed back in the pocket? And he said that, you know, the people that said that really didn't know the chemistry and what was taking place in the room. And I think you should start with the addition of Riley Reiff. Quentin Spain is playing his best of his career. Jonah Williams is also really playing well in his third season. And then Frank Pollock, I think, has done a really good job with getting those guys week in and week out playing at a high level.
I agree completely, and we could talk more in depth about how Spain has taken a step forward, what Williams and what Reiff have done, how Carmen is surprised. But to me, the best person at protecting Joe Burrow against the Ravens was Joe Burrow. I'm going to steal a line from Dave Lapham. He talked about Burrow's pocket manipulation. Those are two words I'd never heard together before. But the more I think about it, the more I see that as maybe the unique trait that Burrow has that most of the other quarterbacks from the 5 to 15 range in the NFL don't. There was that first third down where Burrow steps up to avoid pressure coming off one edge and then hops to his right to avoid a sack attempt coming off the other side. Burrow did that time and time again. His ability to make defenders miss in the pocket, his ability to be in the right spot in the pocket and then scramble when he needs to and be effective doing that as well. That's been the next step for him. That's looking like it could be his elite trait. Every top 10 quarterback has their own thing. And for Burrow, he's developing that. Maybe that's his.
Well, and yesterday he said something. You want to talk about things you've never really heard of. When he said, "I pride myself on being quick in the phone booth." I thought that was interesting because I've never heard that term. But I knew what he was saying, where he prides himself on being able to make decisions quickly in the pocket. And he said, "I really wasn't able to do that at the level I wanted to be able to do it at the beginning of the season." And the reason I'm bringing this up is Joe Burrow, what is it? Now it's officially a year. So, no, or was it?
I think
it was, yeah, mid-November was when he had that injury take place. What he is doing and the level he's playing at coming off of this injury in his second season is almost remarkable. The way he's reading defenses and you talk about manipulating the pocket and protecting himself, this is stuff that we're used to seeing fifth and sixth and Tom Brady's and, you know, Drew Brees, and I'm not comparing him to them. I just want to point that out. But the IQ he's playing with, it's sometimes you just got to sit back and say, I cannot believe this guy is only halfway through his second season in the NFL. And, oh, by the way, coming off of a torn ACL and MCL. I mean, it's just – it's honestly incredible sometimes to watch just the way he's been able to – to come back and operate at this level.
It's a great time to play the comparison game, I think. Like, I have Burrow a neck ahead of Herbert, but I think that right now you are more confident with Joe Burrow running your offense than Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr, Ryan Tannehill, Trevor Lawrence, Baker Mayfield. Burrow is in... It is in that upper tier compared to that list of quarterbacks I mentioned. Because of the pocket manipulation I saw, because of how he has proven that he can be an effective deep ball thrower, because of the throws outside the numbers he made to Marlon Humphrey, because of the challenges he presents with his legs, because of the way he read the Ravens blitz, picked up a guy on his own, made them miss, kept his eyes up, and made plays down the field. The play I'm referencing is the second touchdown to CJ Uzama, where he noticed that they all thought they were going to go to Tyler Boyd. Burrow made someone miss and found Uzama for a touchdown. Like, there are very few quarterbacks who can do that. Burrow, again, I have his number 9 right now, and I mean, he's on the rise. This is his 17th game, and the fact that he's at that level in his 17th game shows you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and you look around the league, and I want to talk about this for a little because I think it's very interesting and a big reason why Bengals fans – I know Bengals fans have been through the ringer here for the last couple of years with this team. And Daniel Jeremiah was actually talking about it on Rich Eisen's show that I watched the other day, and I actually tweeted it. Someone said, "What with the Bengals playing the Jets, why have the Bengals been able to turn it around but the Jets haven't been able to?" And he said – well, because the Bengals have been picking high for the last couple of years, and he said, and they've hit on the last two drafts in a big way. And I think that now you're looking at what could be with the Cincinnati team for a while. And of the top 11 picks in 4 of the last 5 years, they've brought in 2 special elite players, and Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase is what he's referring to. And when you look at what's going on with other teams, whether it be the Dolphins, some other quarterbacks. Houston doesn't have a quarterback. There's still questions about who's going to be the quarterback in Washington. Sam Darnold hasn't been what they wanted him to be in Carolina. Jared Goff in Detroit hasn't really worked out there. There are a lot of teams that haven't been good and have been wanting to get themselves back into the mix, and you just can't do it without a quarterback. And the Bengals have struck gold with Joe Burrow.
So I think now as the Bengals continue to have success, the conversation we're going to be having is like, how did the Bengals make such a quick jump? And what's the game plan for a team like, say, the Jets replicating that? And for me, it goes back to free agency. We've talked so much about the Bengals free agents. But the Jets, here's who they signed in free agency this year. Tevin Coleman, Vinnie Curry, Sheldon Rankins, LaMarcus Joyner, Tyler Croft, Keelan Cole, Carl Lawson, Justin Hardy, and a couple other smaller name guys. There's not a Trey Hendrickson in that group. There's not a DJ Reader in that group. There's not a Chidobe Awuzie in that group. In 2020, it was a very similar story. They've spent a lot of money on free agents. That's kind of been the Jets, one of their defining characteristics with how they've tried to build their team. But it hasn't clicked the way the Bengals have. It's the scouting that they've done heading into free agency and the chances they've taken that have worked. That they believed that Hendrickson really was, despite what the numbers and reputation might have shown, Trey Hendrickson really was a number one pass rusher. They took a chance. You know what? We do think Larry Ogunjobi has just been playing out of position. We do think Chidobe Awuzie hasn't been in a scheme conductive to his strengths as a football player. I could name seven more free agents they brought in where this was a case as well. And there are draft examples like Higgins and Wilson, even Chris Evans, Evan McPherson. The Bengals just got it right with their evaluations. And I think that's the key that they deserve more credit for.
Well, and that's a good point you bring up, Charlie, because I've covered teams that have been the opposite end where they spent a lot of money in free agency, but they just haven't worked out. That you can point to a number of examples of that being the case. And sometimes that's why free agency sometimes can be a crapshoot, because you can spend a lot of money, sign these 3 to 4 year deals and hoping it's an instant fix, and the player just isn't what they needed it to be. And I think that the reason why this is working out so well for the Bengals is it seems like, and this is a kudos to Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor, they brought in the personality and the player first before skill set. Of course, the skill set and what they could do for the team was a big factor. But Trey Hendrickson, all you'll hear about him is what a hard worker he is. And when you talk to him, you can just tell how important his craft is to him. Same thing with Larry Ogunjobi. I talked to Marion Hobby. He said he's the most serious guy in the room at all times. Riley Reiff, a 14-year veteran who Mike Zimmer couldn't say more glowing things about the type of person he is. Cheeto, same thing. Type of person he is a leader in the secondary, couldn't be a more personable, nice – like, I think that has a lot to do with why this is working out, because of the players that they brought in all feel a sense of they haven't accomplished anything. They're very selfless and they really care about the product they put out on the field. They don't come in with these egos and think that they're above being a part of a team that, you know, hasn't won much in the last two games. And I think that's why this is working out.
One more thought about how the Bengals were built and how it kind of transitioned so quickly through free agency. Like, I mean, you all know this, like 2020 was a landmark year for Bengals free agency. It was basically the first time ever they were aggressive in free agency at all with what they did. And then they doubled down on that approach in 2021. The Bengals had so much room to work with because in 19, 18, 17, 16, going back to 1960, whatever, the Bengals hadn't been aggressive in free agency. So kind of as a result, there weren't these long-term contracts of external guys that they kind of had to wait out for their spending window. Like, you see that with other teams. Like, the Jets are a great example. Like, they take these huge chances in free agency, then they don't work, and they're kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. This isn't a Reds podcast, but the Reds are a little stuck right now because they have a lot of big free agents on big contracts that haven't lived up to the dollar sign that they were signed at. The Bengals, on the flip side, heading into 2020, basically had as much room to work with as they could have possibly wanted. Yes, they had Dunlap and Atkins under contract. Yes, they had Green under contract, but those were shorter-term extensions that weren't crippling their long-term flexibility. So the Bengals, it kind of worked out for them. When they flipped the switch and decided to get aggressive in free agency, it was right at the time where they were making the switch. And the timing and the meshing of those two factors in time, I think, is the biggest reason why it was able to change so quickly.
Yeah, and we'll see how this all plays out. But these free agents, and the thing is they're all going to be here next year. Trey Hendrickson, well, Larry Ogunjobi, you'll see if he kind of prices himself out, but the way he's playing, but it seems like he wants to be in Cincinnati. I don't know how many years Cheetos deal was, but I think it was 3 years. Yeah. So the good thing is they've got a good core here, is what Charlie and I are trying to get at. So let's move on and talk a little bit about this weekend's game. The Bengals, as I mentioned, are facing a 1-5 New York Jets team. And can we just start with, how in the world did the Jets beat the Titans, who look like one of the best teams in the AFC? That is the only Jets win. And when I go through the depth chart and I've watched games from afar, I don't quite understand how that win happened.
So I'll tell a personal story here. Monday afternoon, we were in the same boat. Our flights got delayed coming back from Baltimore, multiple hours. So Monday morning, I'd written a story. I'd had my breakfast. I'd had my lunch. And frankly, I just wanted to turn my mind off and watch something mindless. So I swear what I did was I turned on the tape of the Jets-Patriots game. And boy, was that comedy.
Charlie, that's not mindless. That's prep. This is how dedicated Charlie Goldsmith is to the Bengals Beat podcast and the Cincinnati Inquirer. What he views as mindless is actually game prep.
Mike White, two things about him. Like, his throws have very little arc, lots deflected at the line of scrimmage. Another take. They basically have four plays in the Jets offense right now with Mike White. They have an out route to Corey Davis, a check down to the running back, a slot fade, and a run up the middle. The runs don't work. That's another conversation. There isn't a recipe for the Jets offense to be productive and successful against the Bengals. And defensively, the Jets missed more tackles and the Patriots turned more innocent plays into huge pickups than I've seen. So the Bengals have earned the right to be heavy favorites. Mm-hmm. This game kind of reminds me of like a UC conference game right now, in the gap between the two teams, Specifically the quarterback position and the talent on defense. And that's just how I feel about this match.
Well, let's not just talk about the UC conference game, because my God, they almost gave me a heart attack losing to Navy in Annapolis. But that's not what we're talking about on this podcast. But with the Jets, I mean, Mike White, up until last week, he hasn't had a start in the NFL in his career. So
I didn't know who he was on Sunday. Yeah. Now I know who he is.
Yeah. I mean, why would you? He was a practice squad player. But the Jets signed Joe Flacco, but it's not going to be enough time for him to play. I was listening to Robert Saleh's press conference yesterday. He said that he's likely going to be inactive. So we don't have to worry about the old Joe Flacco Ravens versus Bengals. So, I mean, I think with the Jets, the only thing the Bengals really have to worry about is the Jets defensive front with Quinnen Williams. I worked with the Jets defensive coordinator, Jeff Ulbrich, for 5 years in Atlanta, so very familiar with the defensive style he's going to try and run. What they're going to do, Charlie, and let's talk about how the Bengals can combat this, outside of the push that they're going to try and create up front, starting with Quinnen Williams. The Jets' defense is all about what you can give them short. Their defense is built on not allowing the explosive plays. It's the Seattle approach that Dan Quinn installed, that Robert Saleh ran in San Francisco. And I think this will be an interesting game to see. Joe Burrow's accuracy in Baltimore, he missed some throws.
That's a great point.
I'm not trying to nitpick him, but I'm bringing this up because the Jets are not – they're going to do everything in their power, which I know a lot of teams have, but to not let anything over the top. I would be shocked if they allow they don't have the corners to cover Chase, but if they allow more than like a 30-yard play to Ja'Marr Chase, because that's just not what this defense is built upon. They're going to try and challenge Joe Burrow to make those short, intermediate, 5 to 10-yard type throws, and what they try to do is – dink and dunk you all the way down the field, hoping that at some point you're not able to be accurate and they limit the explosive plays. So this will tell us a lot about Joe Burrow's accuracy, which you'd say is a strength of his.
But he
missed some throws against Baltimore. He overthrew T. Higgins a couple times. So what do you think about how the Bengals offense is going to combat? Who do you think might have a big game, knowing what I just explained to you about the Jets defense?
Couple things, like, it seemed like that's the book against the Bengals right now, limiting the deep plays. It's exactly what the Lions and the Ravens approach both were. One, that opened up a ton of chances for Joe Mixon. I think this is another huge opportunity for him.
I forget he's on the team sometimes.
And even Samaje Perine, exactly. That's partially by design. That they hope defensive coordinators forget he's on the team as well. And then Joe Mixon, what's a good example? Basically every game but the Green Bay game creates a really memorable play or two. And So then the other thing is, too, then T. Higgins. Like, this is, like, the biggest curiosity to me right now, the Joe Burrow to T. Higgins connection, which, frankly, they forced against Baltimore because that's what the numbers and the eye test told them and me, just honestly looking at the matchup as well, would be the most efficient way to go because Everett was such a poor cover corner. They saw the connection, the opportunity for a connection with Higgins. It didn't pan out. Then in the end of the second half, they just said, forget it. Throw into Chase, and they did, and you all know what happened after that. But this will be another opportunity for a T. Higgins game from a team that has an even worse second corner than the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that if they're able to even get a few explosive plays, it could be a long day for the Jets. But I would not be surprised if the Bengals struggle a little bit early on to kind of figure out their rhythm, because that's exactly what the Jets defense is going to try and do to them. On the other side of the ball, we can talk about the Bengals defense, but their run game really isn't. New York's run game really isn't anything to be worried about. In particular, Tevin Coleman's kind of on his last leg. You talked about Corey Davis, but I mean, look who's going to be throwing him the ball. So I don't anticipate me ever coming on this podcast, Charlie, and being worried about the Bengals defense because I just think they operate at such a consistent level every week.
The one thing that'll be interesting to gauge, that's kind of what they tried to take advantage of the most because Mike White was struggling last week, and you could argue it's the strength of the Jets offense is their speed from their skill position guys. Michael Carter, a running back, I liked a lot coming out of the draft. I believe he was a third-round pick. Mm-hmm. Compared to Giovanni Bernard, they went to the same school. I believe he led the Jets in receiving yards last game because as the Patriots had a lead and were playing back, they kind of said, all right, let's have Mike White make a simple throw to Carter and hope that his speed could be the difference. The lone explosive play they had then was to rookie wide receiver Elijah Moore, who took that play on a jet reverse around the right end, made a couple people miss and got a touchdown. Bengals fans know Elijah Moore because he's the guy you all wanted them to draft after they took Penei Sewell in the first round. He's fast. He hasn't been consistent in the receiving game at all this season, and that's a big talking point just around the Jets and the Jets media right now is the inability to make him a featured part of the offense yet. But again, with the ball in their hands, Carter and Moore are both dynamic, and my guess is since White's arc and accuracy and pocket awareness aren't at the level they need to be, that's an area they look to a lot.
And a note on that is there's a lot of connections in the NFL, but I have a feeling Zach Taylor's knocked on Lou's door a couple times this week because essentially the Jets offensive coordinator is Mike LaFleur, who was with Kyle Shanahan for years in San Francisco, and he was also a part of Kyle Shanahan's offense in Atlanta when they went to the Super Bowl, but it's all the same offense that Sean McVay runs, the West Coast wide zone scheme. So I have a feeling that Zach Taylor is going to say, because the Bengals offense is very similar, but I have a feeling Zach Taylor is going to know kind of the tendencies and what they're going to be trying to do here. So I think there's probably some behind the scenes conversations going on about that.
Zach kind of talked about it yesterday. Him and Jets head coach Robert Saleh, they kind of have all the same mutual friends. Mm-hmm. Like Saleh's close with McVay, LaFleur, Zach's close to his brother, but like they all have the same like NFC West connections where they all kind of like people they worked with went to the other person's coaching staff. But that's what was interesting. Saleh and Zach had never really connected like that. But that's a story for
another day. How much would you love to be a fly on the wall if they all got together and they were just talking ball? Like, how much would we learn from all those different coaches? Because, I mean, most of them have been very successful and be very interesting conversations.
I like Saleh a lot, by the way. I mean, Carl Lawson, who's a guy I really respect, played for the Bengals last year, signed with the Jets. He said he signed because of the confidence he had in Saleh's scheme, the way he views defense. I think Saleh is one of the front runners, him and Staley, I would say, in like new wave defensive schemes, the guys I really try to study more because of the different approaches and philosophies they brought to combat, you know, the Sean McVay style, the Shanahan, the LaFleur offense. Mm-hmm. Like, they're kind of the opposite end of that spectrum. So as I mentioned, like, Taylor and Saleh are kind of branches from different trees, but on the same level, which is interesting.
Yeah, a lot of connections, a lot of familiarity, and it's shaping up to be, the Bengals should wrap this thing up with a bow and head into a home matchup against the Browns next week. feeling good about themselves, but to quote Mike Tomlin, you can never say never. The Bengals are heavy favorites
here.
You forgot
the other part of that quote.
Oh, don't ask him about, oh, but never. Yeah, but never. all right, well, that's it for Charlie and I. Now we are going to bring on Jason Hoffman to talk a little bit about the Week 8 spread, overs and unders, and Charlie and I, as always, will be back following the Jets game to give you our reaction, so we look forward to talking with you guys then. And here he is. It's Jason Hoffman back for your favorite segment of the Bengals Beat podcast preview. Jason, let's start with how, I mean, you already told me, but for the viewers and listeners, let us know how you did last week.
Is everyone out there excited that their monthly car payment was taken care of last weekend? Because they should be. We went 1-5 on overall picks. 5-1 on overall picks. Mm-hmm. 3-1 on the legit ones that I outlined. Got 2 home dogs last week. Way to go, Giants. Hit that one on the head.
G-men.
And even though I said wait for the Bengals to get to 7 to take them, mm-hmm. 6.5 I said you should still take, which I was right. Mm-hmm. I did not see them winning, as we covered, as we talked about last week, discussed. Thought they could cover the 7. They covered and then some. That was impressive.
Okay.
So we did really well last week. We've bounced back. Just like the Bengals are 5-2 on the season, we are 5-2 on home dogs.
Okay.
And you know what? I like the board this week. I think we're going to go to 6-2. But let's talk about games that don't involve home dogs first. So my first game that I like a lot does not involve a dog at home. The Seattle Seahawks hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I think the Jaguars are going to win that game.
Jaguars are getting 3.5. I like the 3.5, even though there's not value there. It's a -125, so you'd have to bet 125 to win 100. What I like even more than that is the over. 43.5.
Yep.
Over is going to get you -105, so there is some value there. You get some back from the 125 if you bet both of those. But yes, I agree with you. I like Jacksonville to go in there and win. Seattle.
You can't do anything on offense with Geno Smith.
Can't do anything with Geno Smith. Season was on the brink last week, considering how non-competitive the NFC West is once you get outside of Arizona and LA. And the 49ers and the Seahawks both laid eggs last week, mm-hmm. just be honest. So I agree with you. I like Jacksonville to go in there. They got some momentum going. Still have no idea if Trevor Lawrence is actually an NFL quarterback or Urban Meyer is actually an NFL coach. But, yes, we are in agreement there. I like the 3.5, even though there's not much value there, just because crazy things happen in that stadium. But if you like him to win outright, hey, there's value there too.
Okay. What else do you like?
Well, this game will also be included at the very end. Something special I'm going to give our audience, but they got to stay on and keep listening to the end. New England – going to L.A., mm-hmm. getting 5.5. Mm-hmm. Now, Justin Herbert looked terrible in Baltimore a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
That offense got completely shut down by the Ravens. And those of you out there slamming your dashboards, doing double finger guns at your desk because Joe Burrow is so much greater than Justin Herbert, pump the brakes. Okay? One game is one game.
Remember how Joe Burrow looked the first time he played Baltimore? Let's just point that out.
Yes, exactly.
He had a whole season to prepare for that Baltimore front.
Absolutely. I do enjoy taking Bill Belichick against young quarterbacks.
Okay.
Just because even if he doesn't have the personnel, he doesn't necessarily have the great players, his schemes are so good, and what he does to fool them pre-snap and right after the snap, it's on a different level. So I like 5.5 there. I don't know if the Patriots can win outright just because that Chargers defense, once they can get a lead, possibly pin their ears back, get after Mac Jones, rookie quarterback. But I do like the 5.5. Again, not much value there. It's a -112. What do you got?
So ones that have caught my eye is I keep going back to this game, but the Buccaneers at Saints.
Mm-hmm.
I have all eyes on that. I think that obviously the Bucks are the better team, right?
Yep.
But they're
a little wounded.
But they're gonna. They're not gonna. I have the Bucks, I think, losing between 3 to 4 games this year.
Okay.
Just because I think it's just really hard in the NFL. Obviously, they're not going to go undefeated, but I just think that even the best teams have some games that just don't really go their way. And the Saints have the Bucks numbers in previous history. And I know that.
Including last year, except for that playoff game.
Right. And I know that the Bucks are heavy favorites here, but I'm just not willing to give them. Right now, they're favored 5.5.
Which is 8.5 if you give the proverbial 3 points to the home team.
Right. So. I think this game's going to be a lot closer than what the line is saying right now.
Okay.
And Sean Payton likes to get riled up for opportunities. It's the Fox team of the week. He's got a little bit of an ego to him. He likes opportunities to show he is a great coach. So I think that. This game, I would definitely not. I think this game's going to be a lot closer.
So you're taking bounce back performance, Jameis Winston, mm-hmm. to beat the Buccaneers, or at least cover the 5.5. Do you like him to win outright or to cover? I forget.
Just cover.
Okay.
Yeah. So the 5.5. I don't think they're going to.
Okay.
I don't think Jameis. But I mean, I could come on.
And
this
there's some value for you on the board there. It's a -108, not the standard 110. I like the same game, but I like the under.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the under because in this series, last year, since Tom Brady went there, the under hit in all three games they played.
Hmm.
49.5 is a lot of points. I know it's a dome game. Gronk allegedly is coming back. Antonio Brown allegedly is coming back. New Orleans is on a short week. 7 touchdowns is a lot for me. I see this as one of those 24-14, 24-21 type games, mm-hmm. Which keeps us under that 49.5 total. So I would go the under at currently at -108 on Tipico. What else you got?
I know that I'm going to save my home dog and sucker bets for the end, but the other game that I find very interesting, what the line is the Cowboys at Vikings, because the Cowboys are favored 1.5.
Might as well take the juice out of it and go with the pick'em.
I don't know.
Bet the extra money. If you think Dallas is going to win, bet the extra money.
Like, how are they not favored by more?
Well, therein lies the whole question mark, enigma wrapped in a question mark that is sports betting. The line isn't necessarily representative of how the game's going to play out.
Right.
The line is made to ensure that the book gets as close to 50-50 money on each side as it can. So that means there's a lot of the betting public out there.
They just think the Vikings, I guess, are better than
that
what I
somehow,
what we saw week one.
Somehow think that defense, which I love Mike Zimmer, probably the number one dude in all of football to have a beer with, I'm guessing. Or go hunting with, or just hang out with on a rando Sunday afternoon. But that defense is not the Vikings defense of a few years ago.
No.
And what Dak Prescott did in New England, woof.
Yeah.
Like, and that wasn't even in really good weather.
No.
And he's going into Minnesota, which.
A dome.
Dome.
Yeah.
Going to have nice weather guaranteed. I just don't see it either, which makes me think. Bet the Vikings to win because the book knows something we don't know. No. It's confusing to me as well. 1.5. I saw that line and I thought at first it must be a typo. It should be 10.5. Refresh. Nope. It's 1.5.
Same. That one really confused me. So let's talk. What's your sucker bet this week?
Oh, there is an awesome sucker bet on the board.
I hope we don't have the same one.
And... At first, I thought it was the Bengals. That line initially, and I'm thinking this was a typo, right after the Bengals-Ravens game, the initial line on the board, and if I could have teleported myself to the sports book, I would have bet this, was Bengals -4. It very quickly became 10.5. A lot of people are saying the Bengals 9.5, Bengals 10, 10.5, whichever book you're at. is a sucker bet this week because they always have a letdown game, it's the Bengals. But I'm not going to fall into that trap and say that's the sucker game. For me, the sucker game is Carolina and Atlanta.
Okay, we don't have the same one. We're good.
Atlanta went in and did what they should have done to Miami early and then let that game get closer than it should have. Carolina getting 3.5 at Atlanta. I think a lot of people are going to fall into this trap. I think Atlanta wins by at least a touchdown.
Hmm. Okay. That's an interesting one. I can see that. At the same time, I also think I look at who the Falcons have beat this year. It's been like the Jets, Dolphins, and Washington football team, I think.
But when your team has to deny that they are – or has to say they're no longer in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes – there's something under the surface there.
100%.
There's drama going on.
Knowing David Tepper covering a team in the NFC South, he wants a quarterback,
yep,
and he wants to win. And that's why I'm very – something – you're right. Something happened for them to have now leaked that they weren't really ever in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. Because you can't tell me the basically the most prolific player to ever play at Clemson. Hello, South Carolina. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it.
And, you know, you benched Sam Darnold last week. I don't know. I think this is one that a lot of people are going to say, oh, clearly Carolina is the way better team. They'll win this easy.
Not without Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
So mine is, and I can't believe this game is not more. I mean, I get why it wasn't more, but the Giants at the Chiefs, I'm shocked it is only, they're only a 10-point favorite. I mean, I think the Chiefs are going to turn this thing around. At home versus the New York Giants, you think that they're only going to win by 10 points? Come on now.
Kelsey, do we have our first get-right game of the week?
Yes. So that is my get. Like, I looked at that and I was thinking to myself, 10 points, the Chiefs at home. And I know what you're saying, Kelsey. Patrick Mahomes can't stop turning the ball over. But a lot of the interceptions haven't been his fault. And I just think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, like, they're too good to let this season turn into a complete tornado. I think they're going to turn it around, and we are not going to be saying, are the Chiefs broken next year? I'm taking the Chiefs by – I think they're going to blow the Giants out. I mean, I'm thinking we're talking about a 30 to 10 type of deal. I think I'm very down on the New York Giants, by the way. In case you couldn't tell.
Oh, hey, you know what? I'm not going to disagree at all. I like that. I like that play as well.
Okay.
Should we get into home dogs?
Yeah, let's get into home dogs. Let's do it.
I'm so excited for this.
Drum roll, please.
So excited for this. I'm calling it now. Everyone call me out on Twitter, at Jhoff and Cincy, when this loses by at least 2 touchdowns. But home dog of the week.
Don't steal mine.
Home dog of the week. I'm guessing I'm going to steal it, but I doubt it. Because you're way more of a realist when it comes to football than I am. I'm like this pie in the sky. I see this crazy bet that's going to work out and be awesome. First win of the season.
No!
Nobody is winless anymore. The Fighting Dan Campbell, Detroit Lions.
He stole mine.
Oh, see? This is the fun, though. They get to find out in real time that we did not discuss this beforehand.
We don't.
The Fighting Detroit Lions get that first win of the season against whatever it is that Jalen Hurts and the Eagles are trying to do on offense. Plus 155. Your $100 wins you 155. Yeah. They're getting 3.5 if you're interested in the spread, but it's a minus 112, not too much value there. Home dog of the week number one is the Detroit Lions. Now, since we won 2 last week, I did at least, I'm going to take a second one. And I apologize for leading that strongly. I should have let you take the thunder on that.
No, you're fine.
Another 3.5 line. Same division, NFC North. The flailing San Francisco 49ers go into soon-to-be-abandoned Soldier Field and lose to the Chicago Bears, who are 3.5-point dogs, plus 102 on the board. So the bookmakers don't think it's that crazy. The one that strikes me here is the under of 39.5.
Right.
That Bears offense and that 49ers offense really feels like this is going to be a 12-9 game, mm-hmm, or a 14-10 game. Sprinkle a couple of touchdowns in, but it just feels like this is going to be terrible Bears football to watch, and it'll be a real workman lunch pail-like effort to get it done with 3 field goals.
You could put it the whole segment on who's the most disappointing team in the football, and you got to put the 49ers right there.
Because, absolutely. I mean, they were a Super Bowl pick by a lot of people.
Yeah. They're pretty brutal. But the reason I felt so strongly about the Lions, and for the life of me, I cannot figure this team out because they looked – I came back and said to Jason – the Detroit Lions are the worst team in NFL after watching them play against the Bengals. They had the LA Rams sweating, and I know there was a lot of emotion in that game, but Jared Goff
revenge game.
I just couldn't believe how close they played the Rams. And then a week after looking horrible against the Bengals, I can't figure the Lions out, but I do think that they're not going to go a full season without winning a game. I just think that it's so hard to do in the NFL. And I think that the Eagles are really that bad. And did you hear what Nick Sirianni said, like talking about Someone needs to just take the microphone away from him.
By the way, I am not the world's greatest yard keeper. I pride myself on the lawn, but I'm not the greatest. And I'm also, I don't have the greatest green thumb outside of growing some peppers and some greens. But you can't fertilize every day. And you shouldn't heavily water every day. So Sirianni's trying to kill his plants, aka the Falcon or the Eagles, by saying that. It makes no sense. But I get what he was trying to get at.
Yeah, those are the type of things where players start rolling their eyes in the locker room. You never want to be famous for your press conference comments, and he's on a roll with doing that. I just think Jalen Hurts is not very good. I think the Eagles are really bad. And
there's a reason they're still trying to get Deshaun Watson.
The Lions are going to pull the upset here at home.
So two things for me.
Okay.
On that game as well. The Lions. So right now, take the Cincinnati cap off. Forget last Sunday's performance. Right now, if you told anybody on the street who follows the NFL, you can have the Rams versus the Ravens in the Super Bowl, people would take that bet.
Yeah.
The Lions played both of those teams close.
Yeah.
They've only had one clunker this year, and that was against the Bengals.
Yeah.
So in the grand 30,000-foot scheme, they've played it close. This is not that, what was it, 2016 Lions team that went 0-16, 15, whatever right. It was. So, yes, I think they get it done. Now, can I move on to a special new bet that I haven't done yet this year?
The floor is yours.
Okay. People out there listening who've bet before know what a teaser is. A lot of people call it a sucker bet. So I was actually going to put myself on blast for the sucker bet earlier when you brought that up. But I'll do it now, gladly.
Okay.
A tease is where you go in. It's kind of like a parlay. Uh-huh. You have to win all the games you put in there. But instead of having to – just like a straight parlay, instead of having to take the spread as is on the board, you can buy points.
Okay.
So the most common one being a six-point teaser.
Okay.
So I'm going to buy 6 points on 3 games this week, and I'm actually going to do this. And I think it's going to hit. And tell me what you think on this. So Bengals at New York, I'm going to tease from 9.5 down to 3.5. Pittsburgh at Cleveland, I'm going to tease from 3.5 to 9.5 as well, but them getting 9.5 because Cleveland's a 3.5-point favorite right now.
Yeah.
And my favorite game of the week that I already mentioned before, New England going into L.A., instead of 5.5, I'm going to take 11.5 points in that game. What do you think? Is that hit or not? Three-team tease, moving 6 points on the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Patriots. Taking two dogs, taking one favorite.
Yeah, you really like that Patriots-Chargers game, huh?
I don't know why. I feel like Belichick's got this crazy game plan that's just going to make Justin Herbert's head spin.
Okay.
Of course, they're coming off a bye
right
after that terrible showing in Baltimore. Yeah. So the Patriots probably lose 35-3, and I look like a huge dummy, but that's okay. This is all for fun, right?
Yeah, this is all for fun. I felt that way after picking the Eagles against the Raiders last week. So I'm feeling it this week. Jason, before we head out, we know you got some stuff that you need to say.
That's right. Hey, everyone out there listening, we appreciate it, and hope you have as much fun as we do making this. All lines are courtesy of Tipico Sportsbook, which is currently legal in New Jersey and Colorado. And Tipico Sportsbook is the presenting sponsor of all gambling content for the USA Today Network, of which Cincinnati.com and this podcast are a part. Please remember that all everything offered in here is just for fun and is not professional gambling advice. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER and get the help you need. And we'll see you next week. Everyone enjoy this weekend.